And welcome to episode number 9 of the Red Dirt and Hill Country podcast. I'm Lane Jones, along with Steve McCormick. And we got a special guest this week, Logan Mack from Purcell, Oklahoma. Logan, thanks for joining us on this poorly produced, poorly funded, organic. That's the word you use. You introduced us to the word organic. Let me start using that.
So thanks for having me. I'm so excited to talk with y'all. Feels good to talk to some Oklahomans.
Well, you know, I have to admit, I feel fairly connected to the scene as far as, not to give you a backstory on Steve and I both, but we're older. Our gray beards probably give it away. Steve's actually older than me. I'm in my early 50s. And so we've been listening to this scene for a long time. And that's kind of what brought us together. And so we feel pretty connected. We listen, we kind of live this music. And when he first brought your name to the table, and I got to looking around on the good old internets and was able to find, I'm going to use this. This can be a terrible pun, so forgive me, but I got lost in the weeds, so to speak. I got some YouTube videos from 13 years ago. Man, you got me. So I'm hooked.
That's funny. Those are good, huh? You know, I was trying to figure out how to delete all those, and I can't remember passwords from a year ago, so I don't know why I couldn't from 13 years ago, but we finally decided just leave them up there and show the development of an artist, you know. That's cool, man. I was on YouTube a long time ago just trying to start this thing out, and it's so funny, you know. I never would have dreamed, you know, 15, 16 years later we'd still be talking about, you know, anyone would have even watched those YouTube videos from so long ago. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, don't delete them. It's gold. It's gold, Logan.
Might bring some of those back.
You should. Yeah. You should. So as Lane talked about, I think I told you when I talked to you on Instagram firstly that I just stumbled upon you, and I've told several people now it's the most excited I've been in quite some time about finding somebody that I'd never heard of. And this is what I do. I mean, Lane's got a job, I've got a job, Logan, you've got a day job, but pretty much my constant is listening to music, and it's listening to Red Dirt music, and it's, you know, whatever. And so it's kind of rare to find somebody new. And when I found you, I told Lane, like, we have got to do something here. We've got to make sure everybody on the planet knows who this guy is, because it's incredible. It really is.
I appreciate what you do.
Yeah. And we've had these conversations before, both Lane and I, not necessarily on a podcast, but, you know, different people's ears appreciate different things, right? One person likes, maybe the other person, maybe it's not quite so much. We joke around a lot because I'm a Casey Donahue fan. Lane despises and hates Casey Donahue.
That's not true. It's not. There's not partial truth to that, not fully true.
Hey, you're right though. You know, it's everybody, you know, my dad used to say before he passed away, he's like, man, everybody has a little ingredient to a margarita that they like, you know, and it's all, you know, at the end of the day, it's all music, and it's all, you know, artists make music just cause they're inspired, you know? And so you can't hate a guy for what's inspired them, you know, and it might not be your flavor, but what's cool about it though, is they're still out there, and it's someone's flavor. You know what I mean? And if you can capture, you know, I don't know if you'd want 100% of everybody to like your stuff. That might be a little bit weird, you know? So if you can capture 60% of them, I think you're winning, you know?
For sure.
You know, I kind of started off by saying, I feel late to the party here. I mean, you've got 13,000 plus followers on Instagram. And we didn't ask you this when we were off mic just a little bit ago, but how old are you?
I'm old enough to think about it. 33. I just turned 33 in February.
All right. So when you were putting out those YouTube videos, you were in your early 20s.
And even earlier. Yeah, even earlier than that. I was actually, a lot of the videos that I posted, oddly enough, were like archives, you know? I was in some of those videos, I was probably 15, 14.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought you looked young for sure.
Yeah. I was really young. What had happened, the reason, so I'd had a YouTube channel before that one that y'all found. And I moved them all to a new one. Cause I had my real name on the first YouTube page. And I was like, I don't really, you know, I was thinking ahead here thinking I don't want anybody knowing my real name. I didn't know why. I didn't have a reason for them not to know it, but yeah, I actually moved all the videos to a new page. So everything you're seeing, if it says 13 years ago, is probably recorded 15 years ago.
Wow. Well, no.
I was going to say that explains that anybody that's out there that listens to this. If you just happen to go to Google and Google Logan Mack, the first thing that'll pop up, it looks like you're 14 or so. The picture that pops up, the AI generated picture. So
I was a young gun.
Yeah, that's great. And I need to say that I didn't find you on YouTube. I found you on the famous or infamous TikToks, you know, just scrolling around one day. And because, the algorithm knows that I like to listen to music. So it's kind of constantly mixing in different stuff. And lo and behold, it was Steel Toed Boots, Logan. That's the one, the video that came up. And I stopped what I was doing.
I love that.
You kind of, and this could be a whole topic we talk about, you know, when we talk about the platforms of music that are, you know, are in use today, because it's funny. I'm going to make the story short, Steve. So don't get pissy with me here. I have a tendency to drag stories out. So I apologize.
Me too. So Steve, keep us in line, please.
Yes.
Okay. You got it.
Keeps in line. So the platform, you know, YouTube was in for a while, then it kind of fell out. It seems like it's back in now. And I'm just going to tell a quick anecdotal story here. A friend of mine is a guy named John Bauman out of Texas. And we've known John for a long time, back when he would come to Oklahoma City and play at the Wormy Dog. And we would be the only people in the Wormy Dog. And so we got to know John, and we've had him at play house parties for us quite a bit. Well, John has kind of made a name for himself. He plays with the Panhandlers, with William Clark Green, Cleto Cordero, and Josh Abbott. And John is now kind of, he's priced himself out where we can't afford him anymore at our house. But he's a good dude. One of the funniest stories I've heard him tell is when he first started opening up for Robert Earl Keane, he said that Robert wouldn't even talk to him, you know, would hardly to acknowledge him. And then one day they were in Marfa, Texas, and he was playing a gig with Robert. And he said, Robert came up to him and he said, John, because I'm going to tell you, you're doing good at what you're doing. I've been listening to your music on YouTube and I really like it.
Oh my gosh. That is YouTube is great. You're right. You know, it was a big deal back then, you know, and then it kind of faded out. And now they got, you know, which I think that they were putting some stake in TikTok getting banned, and they put a lot of money into the YouTube short side. The only reason I know this was meeting with record labels and talking about YouTube, and all the record labels right now are like gung-ho on YouTube, you know, and I was sitting there going, man, I was doing that shit 17 years ago. What are you talking about? You know, YouTube's big, and man, they're all good, you know, and that's what's funny about Instagram, you know, the 13,000. I started out with a TikTok, and that's all I had social media. Didn't have a Facebook, didn't have an Instagram, and it was last July I take that back. January of 24 was really when I started actually posting stuff to a TikTok. And the night, you know, I wrote Dance Under Stars, which was a really big, it kind of got me viral on TikTok, and I think it had like 13 million total, you know, shares and views and all that stuff. But what's so funny, I love to tell everybody this story, is the night I posted that, my wife texts me. I was in my barn. My barn is my office at my house. And I was in my office, and I just recorded it, and I get a text from my wife. And I have three little girls. I have a 9-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 3-year-old. And my wife texts me that night, and she said, "Logan, get out of the barn, quit making social media videos, and come inside." And kind of chewed my butt about it. She's going to kill me for telling y'all this, but that's okay. She kind of chewed my butt about it, and I posted it, like, walking. I'll never forget that. I posted it, like, in between my barn and my house, hit send. And I go lay down and, you know, get through with the butt chewing from the wife about being out in the barn too late. And we wake up the next day, and I, mind you, I wasn't, I'm not a big technology person still. It's kind of one of the things I'm not crazy about it. You know, being on my phone, I try to get off of it a lot. But so I stayed off my phone that whole day, and I have my notifications turned off on all social media apps so it doesn't buzz me. And we are driving to TNT Ballpark in Hera, and I opened TikTok. And I had 400,000 views on that video. And wow. I leaned over to my wife and I said, "Hey, am I looking at this right?" And she looks at it and she goes, "Oh my gosh." You know, and so we're literally getting out at TNT, walking into the ballpark for my daughter's game. And we're like going through my phone, like reading all these comments and all these shares. And we're like, "Is this real?" And then I sat down in my chair at TNT Ballpark on field one, on the third base side, and I open up my phone and I have an email from Capitol Records. And I thought it was a catfish. Like, I thought it was a catfish deal. So I Google this girl's name. I'm like, "She's not real." Well, she's like the vice president for Capitol Records. And then I scroll further down, and I had like 25 different emails from all these labels over posting that and it just blew our mind. It was like overnight, you know. And then I go home and, you know, of course, all your family's like, "Dude, did you know you're famous on TikTok?" And I'm like, "Well, let's hold on a minute. I don't think I'm quite there yet." But it just blew up, you know. So I can't ever talk too bad about the platforms, because it really, you know, finally helped me get noticed, you know. And but a funny story of that is, a lot of people that I meet, you know, that don't dig in like y'all have, they're like, "Man, how does it feel to be an overnight star?" And I'm like, "Well, for one, I'm not a star yet. And for two, man, I've been playing this guitar for like 16 years, you know, and recording. I was making TikToks before TikTok was a thought, you know. I was just putting them on YouTube." And, it's crazy, man. We don't realize how powerful social media is, you know, and how many people it can reach. And it's a beautiful thing. And there is good in it, you know, there is some bad in it.
Sure.
But there's good in it, to give people this opportunity, you know, to get found in such a different way, to where now you have, you know, you literally today, you know, 10 years ago, there wasn't A&R agents that their job was to scroll their phone all day. You know, mm-hmm. They were out in the bars in Texas and Oklahoma and Tennessee and finding these people, these hidden gems. And now, you know, there's literally positions at labels where they just sit on TikTok all day and try to find the next guy or girl, you know. And it's so strange how that part has changed. And I think some of it's good and some of it's bad, you know, but either way, I feel pretty blessed, you know, that people took on to what I put out there and resonated with it.
Well, and I don't want to try to get all over the place on this, but I know, Steve, you've got lots of thoughts. I've got, you know, so many different directions that this conversation could go. And I don't want to I don't want to leave any stones unturned, so to speak. But when you look at, when I listen to your music, obviously the first thing I do, I'm processing and, all right, what does it remind me of? And, you know, those flavors that you talked about earlier, like the flavors, the notes I hear Stoney LaRue. For sure. I hear notes of Zach Bryan. I heard some Cody Cannon from Whiskey Myers.
Yeah, I love
you
that.
You had an Adam Hood.
Listen to all those guys.
You had an Adam Hood song, Million Miles, on your old YouTube channel. I've seen Adam Hood in bars with 15 people. I love
Adam Hood is a great dude. I know him now from all this. We chat, you know, and that is, he's such a good guy. What you see is what you get. Genuine
great songwriter,
love Adam. Beautiful person, beautiful soul. He's a good dude. It's so funny though that all, you pegged it. I listen. I mean, that's, you know, I listen to, I really, you know, Zach, I love Zach Bryan. I really like his like early stuff a lot. You know, I'm not crazy about all the bells and whistles, you know, in his latest stuff, but he's such a phenomenal artist, you know, and Stoney, man, I used to open every show that I would play with Feet Don't Touch the Ground by Stoney. That was one of my favorite Brandon Jenkins songs.
Brandon Jenkins,
Man, Stoney, you know, I'll tell you what, I was kind of thinking, you know, we were talking this podcast tonight, I knew it was coming up, and I was driving to the lake, and I was sitting there kind of thinking about, you know, like where this all started for me. You know, the love of music, and I played music at a young age, but man, Randy Rogers Band did something to me. One night at a concert, I'll freak y'all out with this full circle story eventually in this podcast, but something that it freaked me out. First time I ever saw Randy Rogers Band, it freaked me out how it made me feel listening to their music. And at that time, I hadn't even played guitar, didn't even know how to play guitar. But I went to a Randy Rogers Band concert, and I believe it was, I want to say it was somewhere down in Lawton. I feel like they were with like Eli Young Band or somebody. But anyways, when I heard them and I heard their kind of music, I thought, man, that's like, that inspired me. You know, and it's so weird now to be working very closely with Rodney Foster, you know, who produced arguably their biggest record, and wrote a ton of their, you know, he wrote Kiss Me in the Dark, Damn the Rain, you know, I mean, Rodney wrote some hits for those guys, but it's just so weird to full circle with that. But yeah, Randy Rogers and Stoney LaRue is like what I cut my teeth on. You know, and made me want to play, you know, live in front of people and write and sing songs. So it's so cool that you mentioned those guys, because they were definitely a big inspiration.
Well, it's been, had an impact on a lot of people, obviously.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of people point to Roller Coasters, kind of that. I mean, that's the album that really, you know, obviously for Randy and his band, but I mean that album.
It's a big album.
If you go through, and we have big debates on here on what to call this genre of music, I've always referred to it as red dirt and hill country. You got the 806 out of Lubbock, just encompass everything. Steve likes red dirt best, but whether you call it Texas country, whatever the label is, this entire scene, there's no doubt there's about five or six albums that everybody will point to. Roller Coaster is one of those. And I think for your generation, because we're about 20 years older than you, for your generation, I think Roller Coaster is that album. And like you said, Rodney Foster fingerprints are all over that thing.
Oh, yeah. And it's, I feel like it's their one of their first albums that is like from top to bottom, just so complete, you know. And
it's one of the best complete albums there are.
You know, honestly, that's a hard thing to do. I think that's a really hard thing to do. And kind of, you know, in a sense, as an artist, to tie the album together and make the album make sense. You know, because I think every good artist really wants an album to kind of feel like a book, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. in a mm-hmm. sense. You know, and open and close good, and, you know, and not get boring in the middle, you know, and stop reading it. And I think that they captured that. And obviously it, you know, their career, what it is now, it obviously just catapulted them. And those guys are, you know, like you said, they've inspired so many people. And you know, the red dirt hill country, man, what I call it is putting honest music out there and really not giving a shit what the bigwigs think about it, you know, just putting it out there and people mm-hmm. catch on to that, the honesty in music. You know, and I think that's one good thing that Randy Rogers Band and Stoney, you know, and all those guys and Wade Bowen, it's good because it's just honest and it's real, you know, and you can, my favorite thing about a song is when I listen to it and I close my eyes and I start painting a picture of my life with this song. And I feel like Randy Rogers Band has not only such a good way to do that, but also to ensemble the band together and have the melody that just like makes your foot tap, you know, or makes you get sad with them, one of the two. And it's such an art to do that. And I think that's why they've had so much success, is they are who they are. Here it is. And if you like it, great. You know, and if you don't, you probably got something wrong with your ears a little bit, but that's okay.
Probably.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, but now we're territorial too. And we, you know, Okies, I lived in Texas for a number of years. So I can say this. Plus I have a Texas flag tattoo, so I can claim from Texas, and my wife's from Texas. So we have this complex as Okies that, you know, we want to be better than Texas. I make this joke all the time. I'm like, per capita, we're putting out as good a music as anybody in the country. We're putting out really per capita more than Texas is. And Turnpike. I mean, is there a better band out there than Turnpike right now? And that, you know,
man, there. You know, a funny story about Turnpike. So I live in Washington, Oklahoma, and I can remember Evan. So every Wednesday night, there's this bar called Libby's Cafe, and every Wednesday night they would have what was called Buffalo Family on Wednesday nights. And I would go up there as a kid, and I would listen to the Damn Quails, you know, Gabe and Brian, and I would listen to Evan, and I would listen to Aaron Holt and all these guys, you know. And that was right in the middle of listening to the Randy Rogers Band stuff too, you know. And it was so, like, I don't think anyone, I think they do now, but everyone that was a regular there that went up there every Wednesday night to hear them and to see them interact in that setting, like, got it. They understood it, you know. And it just, and then the Damn Quails just blew up.
Yeah.
You know.
Brian White. Yeah, I love Brian White.
Man, I'll never forget sitting in Libby's listening to Me and the Whiskey and listening to Gabe sing that. And I was just like, what in the world? What, you know, sadly, I was like, why is he here? You know, why is this band here? You know, and it's just, but no.
Is there a better 1-2 punch than Brian and Gabe? I mean,
I don't know if there is, to be honest. You know, I've had this debate a lot with my friends, but it's just such a unique band, really, you know, and just what they did, you know, not a lot of people did that, you know, where they had two different sounds, you know, and two different guys singing different. Not a lot of people were doing, you know, still to this day, they don't do that.
Nobody wants to give up that.
Right. You know, but it was so cool, you know, to be able to sit there and listen to Quicksand and then turn around and listen to California Invitation. You know, I'm like,
is there a better song?
All in the same band. You know, it throws you off, kind of. It's like, wait, what? Was there an intermission? No, it's the same damn band up there doing this.
Well, and you know, that and that hatch, so to speak, out of Mike McClure's basement over in, you know, just outside of Ada.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the amazing part is, you get down around Ada and you start in, I mean, we could get in this rabbit hole. I mean, Mike McClure's got his hands all over everything too. I mean, Turnpike's early albums, you know, those are Mike McClure produced. I mean,
Mike is the GOAT for me, man.
He's the godfather. Yeah. He's just,
and he's such a sweet person too. He's such a good person. You know, he is who he is, you know, and I love that. I tell people all the time, you know, we go to Tennessee and do all this stuff, and my manager's out of Tennessee, and we'll go do all this stuff. But I sit and tell people, it's so funny whenever I'll have these, you know, we'll have some studio musicians if we're in cutting demos, and they'll be like, you know, they're hearing my stuff, and they're like, man, where can we get more of this? And I said, we'll go to Oklahoma and Texas. And they always start laughing. They're like, really? And I'm like, no, seriously. Like, you can walk Oklahoma and Texas. This is the difference to me is, and my manager came down to Oklahoma and he was so in shock. We were at Hollywood Corner on a Thursday night, Toby Keith's bar. And my manager is like, what is going on with all these people, these songwriters? This isn't normal, Logan. And I said, Todd, it's Oklahoma and Texas scene. This is what you get at open mic nights in Oklahoma and Texas. And he couldn't believe it. He talked about it for a week. He couldn't understand it. He's like, why are those people not famous? And I said, well, some of them are around here, you know, but they don't feel the need to go up there. But it's just so funny, you know, to and you know, everybody likes to compare it, you know, the Nashville to the red dirt scene, you know, and I don't get too caught up in it, but it's so funny to hear the opinions and the observations of these people from everywhere but Oklahoma and Texas, you know, and how much they dig it, you know, and it's just so interesting to me.
Well, the fact that 180,000 people, you know, which that's a completely different topic. 180,000 people packed in the Stillwater for 4 days. Right. I mean, that's in our little state, 3.74 million people, whatever we have here. We were the center of the music, that genre of music universe for 4 days. And no coincidence. I mean, like you said, this scene has been here, and Steve and I have done, we have a Genesis episode where we talk about where the beginning was for us, and everything goes back to the same thing. All ends up in Stillwater for us, both of us.
Yeah.
But the fact that, you know, a lot of the things you're talking about, and you've been doing this, since you were a teenager, you know, I feel late to the party on this. Like we've missed out. I don't know how we let, and maybe it's because we're inundated on social media with so much, that it's easy not to pay attention to what's right underneath our nose. And over the last several days, I've listened to your music. I feel like, man, how in the world did, and Steve, I'm going to thank you for this. And this is my thank you, by the way, for introducing me to Logan's music, because I'm hooked. My daughter heard it. She loves it. My wife was in here. She loves it. And how did we miss out? How come I'm not one of those 400,000 people on TikTok or one of the 13,000 followers on Instagram?
Man, I can actually answer a little bit of that to you. I actually, you know, I started playing, I think it was, I started learning how to play guitar when I was 14 or 15 from my buddy's dad. I would go over to my buddy's house like every day, and his dad would teach me a new chord. And that's actually kind of how I learned. But so I played, you know, and I played and I got a little bit of recognition and wound up getting hooked up with a manager out of Dover, Oklahoma. And I went to Nashville, and I went and played, what is the bar? I went and played at Steamboat, not at the main attraction, but one of the bars there. I feel like it's like the Chug Boat or the Tug Boat,
Tugboat, yeah. Which is closed now, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. So I played at that bar, you know, and we got a little bit of traction from there, and it kind of shortly catapulted, you know. And so next thing I know, we're in Nashville trying to, like, you know, do some business. And that was when I was 18, I kind of just had enough, to be honest. I felt like I was turning into a karaoke singer, you know, playing these 4-hour shows and really not getting anyone to listen to my stuff. So I actually took a hiatus. I met my wife in 2010 when I was living in Nashville. And I told her, you know, we were kind of flirting and talking, and I was like, I'm moving back to marry her. I'm gonna give this up and go back to the oil field, or go into the oil field. So I actually moved back, and my first live show since 2010 was this past January, opening up for Radney Foster.
Oh, wow.
Super intimidating too. And the funny part about it is he had no clue. When we got to the show, it was at the Bosk Arts Center in Clifton, Texas. We're in the green room, and I go out and I play my set, and I come back in, and Radney goes, boy, I can tell you've just been doing this for a while. You're so good with the crowd. And I said, well, thank you, Radney. I said, but I got to be honest, I kind of catfished you a little bit. I didn't mention this. That was my first show in 10 years in front of a human besides my wife and kids or my friends at a cookout. And he couldn't believe it. He's like, what? And his wife, Cindy, was freaked. She's like, you got to be kidding. But it was, we joke about it now. And he tells everybody, he's like, yeah, this little turd. He didn't tell me at all that he had not played a show in 10 years and came and opened the show for me. So I had a hiatus. I never stopped playing. I just stopped playing and posting, you know. I just wanted to focus on raising my family and starting a family, really, you know. But I'm so glad I got back into it, you know. And like I said, it's taken off, and people are actually listening now. And man, it's just a different world, too. I feel like a lot of people have turned into lyricists lately, in the last 5 years, where they listen to lyrics more than a melody that they can tap their foot to, you know, and I think that's benefited me a lot as well.
So talking about TikTok, Logan, I got a couple of things I want to say. In reading some of the comments and those kind of things, one of the people that commented on one of the songs on TikTok said, "Don't sign, Logan, don't sign. Yes. Keep it local." Right?
Yes.
You talk about going to Nashville, you talk about, you know, being surprised going to a softball game, and you've got record companies reaching out to you. What do you feel comfortable with telling us right now what the future plans are?
Yeah, I do. So I actually, I've been real standoffish, you know, with signing a record deal, just because, you know, it's one of them deals. What you were doing is what got you where you were, you know, and then all of a sudden all this change comes and these labels, you know, they want to set and sign you and promise you all this stuff. And it just kind of scared me. One guy that I really found some common ground with, his name's Greg Nadel, and they flew me out to LA. He was running Elektra at the time. And we were talking, and I just felt like he really got me. One thing that y'all don't know about me either is, and it caught me so off guard, is we were sitting in his office in downtown LA, and he goes, "Man, I got to ask you a question." And I said, "What?" He goes, "What do you think about Tom Petty Wildflowers album?" And that's my favorite album, is Tom Petty Wildflowers. And it was so weird that he said that. I asked Todd, my manager, after the meeting. I was like, "Did you tell him that?" And Todd was like, "No." But he just seemed super genuine and super interested, you know, in the development side of me as an artist. And he got it. And he, one thing he told me that eventually made me sign was that he said, "Man, I don't, you know, you're not country, you're not this, you're not that. I think you just make really good music and you can be in whichever lane you want to be." And he said, "Which lane do you want to be?" And I said, "Man, I come from Oklahoma. Like, Red Dirt's inspired me." And I said, "So, I mean, obviously that's in my blood, you know, is Red Dirt music." I said, "But I don't want that to scare anybody to where, you know, like, they don't think I can ever, you know, get out and the mainstream of people listen to me." I said, but I want to make sure you understand, I don't want to be mainstream either." And he said, "No, I get it perfectly." He said, "You just want to make music." I said, "Exactly. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want anybody ever coming over the top of me and saying, 'Hey, put some twang into this.' You know, I just want it to be what I do." And he really respected that. And so I wound up, you know, we agreed on a deal. And the craziest thing, 2 weeks later, Elektra got dissolved. And my deal was no good. Yeah. A guy named Elliot Agranz came in and took over Atlanta and Elektra and dissolved Elektra. And I just felt like that was kind of God, you know, there again, steering the wheel, and, you know, whether I wanted him to turn on that street or not, he did. And I think it worked out for the best. You know, we're still independent right now and we're doing really good. You know, I feel like being independent. Obviously you want those, you know, labels, just one of the things about labels is they just make it easier to get people to hear your music, you know, but I think as long as we can be organic and do what we're doing right now, that's the future right now for me that I know, is that we're just going to keep doing what we're doing and stay independent and, you know, try to do our own thing and pave our own way, you know, without a label. That's not to say I won't sign with a label, you know. I feel like every instance, you know, or every deal might be different and it might work out and it might not, but it's definitely not on the forefront of my mind at all. What's on my mind is just trying to pump out some music, you know, and keep writing and be creative and keep it fun. You know, I own a construction company that I do pretty well for myself. And so that's been a really nice thing, is my EP coming out, I fully funded it by myself, just from my construction money. Every dollar that I've made for music up until today, from merch or shows or anything, streams, I haven't touched a penny of it. I've funded everything just from my day job. And I got a lot of pride in saying that, you know, that's important to me that I'm able to do that. And it's a unique situation. And I think it's kind of intimidating a little bit to some of the record labels, you know, looking at it from.
Well, that allows you, gives you that autonomy that you need to be who you are. I mean, that.
It just keeps me free. You know what I mean? And that's music to me. It's just music. The reason I write music is because it makes me feel really good. And it's a euphoric state that I get in when I play music and write it. And I just feel so free doing it. And it makes me feel good. And I never want to lose that, you know, and I tell everybody all the time, I always want to get to, not have to, yep. You know, and that's important to me. And right now that's kind of the route we're on, and it's free and it's artistic still, you know, and I'm having fun doing it, and I get to go, you know, I get to go to recording studios and I get to write and I get to come up with something that's just unwritten, you know, and start writing it. And that's so cool to me. And like I said, that's the goal, you know, the goal right now. I don't have labels on my mind at all. I just have, you know, the fans and getting their music out and just, man, playing for people. It's so joyful for me, to be honest. And I genuinely say that. I enjoy every minute of getting to share a story, you know, about something I went through in my life with 80 to 100 people, you know, every weekend at these listening rooms that I've been playing in. So,
well, that, you know, you mentioned listening room. So, and this is bigger than a listening room, but I see you're at the Kessler in Dallas at the end of May.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Love the Kessler. I mean, I saw Mike McClure band back when Tom Skinner was still alive. He was on bass, and my daughter's very first concert when she was still in my wife's stomach was at the Kessler. Oh, wow. Back in 2010, Mickey Motor Cars and Mike McClure band.
Great man, concert. You're at
Kessler, end of May, man. Motor
Cars, that's awesome. Love them.
You're the Kessler. I mean, that you talk about an incredible place to play and listen to music. Man, that's that's awesome.
Tell you what, we're really excited. I'm really excited. I can't wait to get to the Kessler because, for one, it's the closest show to home that I've done. But number two is just, man, every opportunity that I get to go open up for Rodney Foster and learn from him is such a blessing to me. And Rodney is really, I mean, I this sounds surreal saying this because he's one of my songwriting heroes, but, you know, it's so cool. I text Rodney four nights a week. He'll shoot me some lyrics, you know, and it just seems surreal to me that I'm talking to him, you know, in that sense. But Rodney is really, man, from the first time I met Rodney on, he's been like a father figure to me. And, you know, sometimes I'll sit and tell my wife, we were leaving Austin. I'd open up for Leroy Parnell, and I was driving home. And I was just like, you know, I got back on Rodney because we were talking about the next show. And I said, man, how lucky am I to have a mentor like that? You know, and he's so genuine. And Cindy, his wife, has been so sweet to my wife and really taken her on and, you know, giving her the ins and the outs of being the wife of a musician. And it's just, they're just such sweet and genuine people that it's surreal. And, you know, I'm grateful to be at the Kessler, but I'll tell you right now, I don't care if I was on the corner of a street playing, you know, if Rodney asked me to do it, that's what I think of him. And I'd be there and know that I was doing good doing it because he thought it was a good idea. He's just such a good person. But yeah, the Kessler, I've never even been there, never been to a show there. But I'm really excited and thankful that I'm getting to play there. It gives me goosebumps talking about it, man. It's just very,
you're going to enjoy it. And you know, you can't, having Rodney Foster in your corner. I mean, I know the list of Texas royalty and music it's a long list. Like you can't just make a four or five person Mount Rushmore of Texas music, of Texas musicians. But when you talk about Texas royalty in that scene in particular, Rodney Foster's in that discussion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he's, to have him in your corner is a big deal.
It is.
That's huge.
No, it is. And like I said, it's just having someone like that, that, you know, has been there, done that, and they're on their way back to call and just, you know, I'll call him random nights and I'm like, hey, man, what do you think about this lyric? You know, and for him to respond to me at 11:30 at night. And, you know, he's always, one thing I'll say about Rodney is he's always so encouraging. You know, he texted me this past Monday night. He sent me a text out of the blue and it said, keep going. You're so good. It's going to happen. You know, and I just don't think people like him, you know, I just don't think he understands what that means to me, you know, to hear that encouragement. And like I said, it's one thing to have a hero, you know, and then it's another to meet them and see how well they treat others, not just you, the staff at every venue, from the top to the bottom, just how honest and how nice and sweet they are, you know, to everybody they interact with. It's just, it gives you hope for the world, I guess is what I'm saying. You know, it's just, you think he's a great songwriter, he's a better human.
Can we get into a little bit about Logan?
Yeah. Please. Yeah. What do y'all want to know?
Well, first of all, I want to say, I know the real story from how you told it about your song called Hey There, Jesus.
Yes.
But I can't help but draw parallels between what you were talking about with Elektra and It Was Meant to Be and all that kind of stuff. I don't know which came first. I assume the song came before the Elektra thing happened, but that's all I want to say there is there's some parallels there. So maybe you knew what you were doing long before you knew what you were doing.
Yeah, man. Hey There, Jesus is, yeah, I did write that before the Elektra deal, but man, that's the one song. I've never written a song in my pickup. I wrote that song in my truck from 27th Street and Moore to the Goldsby exit. I wrote that entire song.
No way.
And oh yeah. Yeah. We were at practice and two practices before, her coach was, she's like, man, I do you know a chiropractor? I'm having some back issues. And so I referred her to my buddy Craig, and two practices later, she came over there and she let the team know that she had a tumor on her spine and she had cancer. And golly, it just, you know, it was one of those instances, literally how the song starts. It was just a dashboard prayer. I was driving, you know, sitting there talking to myself in my head, and I was like, hey, Jesus, you know, like, I need you to listen to me. Like, You've been blessing me tremendously lately, but like, take all that away and give it to her if that's what it takes, you know. And it just spilled out of me. And those are the ones you wish all of them were like that and didn't take you 3 years to write, you know.
Right.
But yeah, no, it was. And you're right. It is parallel with that, you know. And like I've told everybody, you know, like, man, I'm worried about a page I didn't write, you know, for tomorrow. You know, and it's already written what's mm-hmm. going to happen and how this is going to end up. And I truly believe that. And so I just got to make sure I'm in the vehicle and paying attention, you know, and I know my time's going to come and, you know, and everything's going to work out. I just got to trust the process.
You're speaking to a lot of people, and hopefully you'll be speaking to more people when they hear this podcast. I know I've got a number of people waiting to hear it, but okay. Logan Mack, you mentioned owning the construction company. You've been in the oil fields. I've watched your stuff and read about, you know, your dad dying and you're making a promise that you would come back to the music. So tell us a little bit about you, where it started, how you ended up where you're at.
Yeah. So how I started in music was actually, like I said, my friend's dad, he had this band called the Red, well, now he does, called the Red Grass String Band, but he's always very musically inclined. And we would go over to his house, and I've always been a singer. I've always sang. My mom couldn't get me to shut up when I was younger, singing every song in the backseat of her car. But Rick would sit, and he would play like Merle Haggard, you know, on the guitar, and I never heard music like that. I've heard the songs he sang, but, you know, just like, in that intimate setting, listening to him sing them. And I thought it was so cool. And so one day I was like, hey, Rick, do you mind teaching me how to play a couple chords? You know? And so the first song that he taught me was Mama Tried. I have it tattooed on my arm. But he taught me Mama Tried by Merle Haggard. And I picked up on that pretty quick. And then the next semester of high school, I was a big sports guy, and we had to have an elective, you know, that was an art credit. And I did not want to draw. And so they had general music was the class. And first day of the class, I walk in and Miss Scarberry, who actually runs the Oklahoma Opry, was my teacher. And we had these guitars. And I was getting double time. In the evenings, I'd go over to Rick's, but at school, I would sit in her classroom and she would teach me a little bit of guitar. And it wound up one day she came to me and she knew I didn't own a guitar. I still have this guitar. It's this just cheap Fender, like not a great guitar, but it was good enough. She came over and she goes, which hopefully the superintendent isn't listening to this. She came over and she goes, hey, I'm not supposed to do this, but you should take this guitar home. And I was like, oh, okay. Are you sure? And she goes, yeah. She said, you have a talent. She said, you need to take this home and play it. And so I took it home and I started playing every night. And, you know, then eventually friends started listening and liking it. And we went and I would do the backyard parties, you know, and then eventually my first gig, I was working at Libby's Cafe running food from downstairs to upstairs, which was awful. My legs hurt every night. It was worse than football camp. And they had it was a Friday night, and they had a band cancel last minute. And I told the bartender, I said, hey, I'll go up there and play. And she was like, what? I said, yeah, I'll play. And from there on, I was playing. I played that night and everybody loved it. And I went and played it. I'd play in Tuttle, Oklahoma at this little Mexican restaurant on Taco Tuesdays. And I swear 90% of my fans were from Tuttle, Oklahoma on Taco Tuesdays when I would play there. And it just grew and grew and grew. And like I said, I wound up going to Nashville and doing all that and kind of took off from actually playing shows for about 10 years. But really what sparked it back up, I don't know if you'd heard before or not, but my dad, you know, was really passionate about my music, and he loved, just absolutely loved sitting on the back porch and listening to me play. And he came up to me one day in my office, and I guess it would have been, 2021. He came up and he had this ticket to The Voice printed out, and he's like, man, you should try this. And, you know, I'd turned him down times before, but then when I realized he went to Kinko's and printed this paper out, I was like, okay. And 2 weeks later, he wound up passing away. And that was the last conversation, you know, that I got to have with my dad, was him asking me to play music, and it just kind of set a fire in me again, and I couldn't not do it, you know. And everything I did the months later, I just gravitated to the guitar, and I really grieved through music. Honestly, through writing, but it wasn't listening to other music. It was just what was going on in my head. I started writing it down again, you know, and then now I'm here talking to y'all on a podcast. You know, it's just crazy how it all happened and how everything, you know, full circle. Because if you would have told 18-year-old me that was living in Nashville and just so done with music at that time that, hey, you're going to have a wife, three little girls, a successful construction company, and then it's going to happen, I wouldn't have signed up. I'd have been like, no, that's way too long to wait, you know. But like I said, it's I truly believe it's, you know, and I'm not here to sit and tell you I'm this perfect Christian, but I am a man of faith. And I do believe that, you know, Jesus died for my sins. And I think it's in his timing. You know, and there's just unexplainable things that have happened in the last 6 months that you can't point to anywhere but that.
That's great.
That's good stuff. Man, that's, you know, Steve, you mentioned when we first talking about getting you on here, and Steve said, you had it in a text, I think, you know, you put your family first. You know, in some form or fashion, I don't remember how you worded it, but I was like, man, this got to be a good dude.
Yeah, man, that was just important to me, you know, and to be honest, you know, regardless of anyone likes my songs from 15 years ago, the true honesty in it is I really felt like I had to go on the path that I wouldn't have had these songs. There's no way I would have had them, you know, if it would have happened then. And it's really a blessing. A blessing in disguise, because, you know, the life that I've lived the last 10 years sure is easier to write about than writing back then, you know. And I've really experienced, I feel like that's why people resonate with my music, you know, is because they can tell it's real. And I wouldn't have had that without the path that I took. So if I could do it all over again, I'd do it all over again.
It's so real. That's what's so great about it. And I love what you said. If you hadn't had the experiences, you wouldn't have had the songs. And there's nobody in my family that's a songwriter or a singer. I do have one son that has picked up the guitar, and he is kind of self-teaching himself, and it's really fun to watch. But I have a an older son that we had a little bit of excitement this week, and he got himself stuck in the mud, and he, you know, was like, "Oh, I'm sorry, you know, I didn't mean to do it, and I hate to have you come out and help me pull out." And I was like, "No, this is what it's made of. This is going to be a story for you one day. You know, it wasn't perfect timing. It wasn't what you meant to do. Don't apologize for it. Anybody questions you, you say, I wanted to go down that road. I went down that road and I got stuck, and it turned into a really fun story." So I, Logan,
that's the thing. I talk to a lot of people when they listen to my music. You know, most of my music is pretty deep, and they're like, "Man, I'm so sorry you had to go through that." And I'm like, "Hey, you don't need to be sorry at all, because I don't really think anybody understands. You don't know what true happiness is or true appreciation until you have true sadness." Mm-hmm. You know, and I think a life well lived has experienced every emotion of life. And you know, like I said, I point it back to my songwriting. I don't think the songs were there. I hadn't lived enough, you know, and that's all right. And everybody has their different path, but I'm very grateful for every hardship I ever had. You know, it's made me who I am and the writer I am, and made me be able to enjoy things I probably wouldn't have looked to enjoy, you know, 10 years ago. But it's definitely been, you know, it's been a process. But like I said, you know, with losing my dad and all of that, it was tough. But man, I really feel like he's up there pulling strings for me right now. I know he is, you know, and it's just really cool to be living out, you know, what I told him I was going to do, you know, whether it was the same route we talked about or not. You know, it's just feels good to be able to know that other people have the same hurts or the same happinesses that I, you know, that I have, you know. And that's what's so cool about songwriting, is it's so it's vulnerable when you write a song, because you immediately, you're like, "Man, no one's going to understand this." But when they do, you kind of build a community out of it, you know? And that's such a cool thing as well, you know, to hear the stories. You mentioned reading all the comments. Man, I read every one of those, and it's just so crazy to realize that other people have the same exact things that you've been through, you know, and they resonate on the same way. And it's really a beautiful thing.
So speaking of that, Lane, I'm sorry, I kind of monopolizing it here. I know I can tell by the look on your face, you've got something to say. But Logan, if you write songs based on experience, which I know you do, right? Because I've listened to, I think, everything you've got out there. What's your experience behind Homewrecker?
Homewrecker. So Homewrecker, I wrote, do y'all recall last year, or I think it was last year, the year before, the tornado that went through Cole? So it was an EF4.
Ada last year.
Cole is Washington, basically. It's where I live. It was my people that lost everything, our friends and family. And I actually wrote Homewrecker. So I was sitting there. I had my bulldozers and my Tracos and skid steers. We were helping with cleanup. And for some reason, it just popped in my mind. Those people lost, like, everything. You know, and I was sitting there and looking around all this destruction. And when I was young, my mom would call women homewreckers, like these women that would, like, go try to date married men. She was like, "Oh, she's a homewrecker." Yeah. And it always just stuck with me, that word. It was so interesting as a little kid hearing that. And, you know, when I was sitting at the side of all this tornado stuff, I was like, "Man, this is a homewrecker. Like, it's just and it just sparked something in me to where I originally started writing the song out as a tornado song. And it was strictly about a tornado. And when I listened to the lyrics, I was like, "Man, that could be about a woman." You know? And so I just went, and that's what helped me finish the song. I had the first verse, and, you know, I was just kind of like, as I was picking stuff up, literally, I was like, "You home wrecker," you know. And one person in particular was Larry Paul Bridwell, who lost everything. He was on the news. He took a direct hit. And, you know, I was like, one of the questions, I was like, "Of all people, why would you wreck that man? He's such a good man." And that's in the song. Why would you, you know, why'd you wreck that man? Mm-hmm. But man, that song just got built from an old saying my mom had and looking at the destruction of a tornado and weird ways that my mind works and plugs those two together, you know, and it's, I'm really excited about that song. That song's one of, man, we've cut that song like three times in the studio and we just haven't got it right, you know, and it's, that's one of my struggle songs in the studio that, it's going to come out. A lot of people have been asking me about it and messaging me saying, when are you dropping this? You know, and I'm just, hopefully they understand and appreciate, you know, I'm just, we hadn't got it yet.
You got to get it right. You
know? Yeah. And it's important. And it's been, you know, and that's,
it's, as you tell that story, about the origins of that song. And I pulled up the Cold Tornado EF3, April 19th, 2023. I'd forgotten about that actually, because cycled back up over near, kind of between Shawnee and Norman, yeah, and Pink, your Pink,
yeah,
which that's another song, Pink Oklahoma from Mike McClure. So that, you know, your song that's been sitting in a barrel basically for your entire life, like oh, fine wine, just, and it's not ready to come out yet. It doesn't sound like you're,
right. Yeah. You're, I mean, the lyrics are there. It's just the, you know, the production of it, I'm one of those, we have this joke with my manager. He's like, we're going to be the slowest people to release music. And he laughs about it and gives me a hard time. But I'm not that guy that's just going to throw out 35 songs a month. You know, I they're important to me. I think because they're so close to my heart and they're real stories, you know. But that's been a struggle in the studio, you know, is just trying to get that right sound and trying to make sure it sounds like me. You know, that's really important to me. Not that our, you know, artists project to project can't have different vibes, you know, but I just, that's one of the songs I've put my foot down and I'm like, nope, until we know it, we're not putting it out.
And you'll know.
Yeah. And we've known with other ones, you know, I got this fun song called West Virginia, You and Me that I wrote one night, and it's, man, it's really groovy. It's a cool song. It's almost got like a, it's different. Y'all, but I think people appreciate it. It's definitely different than stuff I do, but it's exactly what I wanted, you know? And so whether people resonate with it or not, I'm happy knowing that it's exactly how I envision the song coming out. And it's very, it's got a little bit of Muscle Shoals vibe to it, to be honest. It's kind of, it's a little different, but it's fun, and it makes me, you know, I find joy out of it, playing it live, you know, and that's the most important to me, is just keeping this art joyful and having fun with it. So, but yeah, I'm trying to perfect all these songs. I'm very picky about the studio quality and all that fun stuff. So,
well, I love Homewrecker the way it is. I certainly appreciate you getting it the way you want it, but it's important to me that I say to the people that listen, I know what it was about. As a matter of fact, earlier in the week when I was taking notes and I was listening to it, I literally wrote Homewrecker-Tornado. So anybody that's listening, don't think that I was asking and it was a trick question or anything else. I knew it was about a tornado, so I wanted you to tell that story. I really did. I have to say another one of your songs. One of the first ones that I came across after I discovered you, my wife won't listen to it. We listened to it twice. I started to play it again, I think last night, and she can't listen to it, Logan. Because
which one is it? Is it Redbird?
Nope. And I love Redbird. Oh, I love that one. No, it's Stay at Home Mom. And she says,
Stay at Home Mom. Okay.
My wife won't listen to that either.
It makes her tear up.
And she says, don't play it. I'm afraid I'm going to cry, because we were in the same boat whenever, I don't know when you wrote it, but the story you tell at the beginning of it, you know, two under two, that was us. And I've got four kids, but at one time we had two under two, and it was really, really, it was the most important thing, you know, back at that time, that through changes of jobs on my part and everything else, that we had a stay-at-home mom, because nobody would raise them like she would, like you say in your lyrics and everything else. So that one,
man,
really
I'll tell you
hits
what, that song, I'm so glad you brought that up. That song doesn't, not a lot of people bring that up. And that's one of my favorite songs I've ever written. But that was one of the toughest, that song's been lived in. because I actually that song took me 3 years to finish. And it took growing as a young family to finish, to know where to go with it, you know. But yeah, that song, to be honest, actually, so Stay at Home Mom was like, my wife put that on her Facebook. I don't have a Facebook. She does. My wife posted that on her Facebook probably 3 years ago, just that first verse. That's all I had written for 2 years was the first verse. And people went nuts over it. But I think it was just lived in, you know, and it was an honest song. I you know, my wife one day, it's just so funny how the world works is, you know, one day we're griping about how our girls just fight over the silliest things like brushing their teeth, you know, at night. And I walked in one night and my wife brushing her teeth, tearing up. Helping me finish the song, you know, it was just living it through her. And that's what I mentioned earlier. Some of the songs, you know, you just got to live them a little bit to be able to finish them. But yeah, that's a special song. And that's one that we're not, I'll give you a hint. We're not done with that one. We did put a version out of it, which was really cool. Cause Tammy from the Steel Drivers actually sang background vocals and played the fiddle on it. And that was, we're not done with that one. Yeah. I think that one's we're going to do an acoustic. Well, I'm probably sharing too. It doesn't matter. I'm going to do an acoustic album.
Okay.
We're going to take it old school, how there's an A and B side on vinyls. And my A side is going to be produced music with a band, and my B side is every track I want to have a guitar vocal of the same song on the album.
Wow.
We called it a black and white side, you know, but no, that song we're going to recut that one as well, and I'm really excited about it.
You play that one acoustic, people are going to drive off the road, dude.
Yeah, it's a special song, man. And like I said, you know, obviously it's one of those songs that, you know, 18-year-olds that don't have any kiddos don't resonate with it right now. But, you know, the way I describe that song is I think it's going to hang around for a while, because there's going to be a point in your life that you can listen to that song and be like, yep, I know what he was, you know, been there. Which is cool, which is, you know, I try to go for in songs that I write. I want them to, you know, resonate with multiple people and never get old. You know, that's the hope, right? With every song you write. But no, that is one of the songs that it's tougher for me to sing live, especially with my wife sitting anywhere in the area. It's just such a personal song, you know, and it's those were some hard years, becoming a dad and making that decision, you know, with my wife, to stay at home, you know. And there were some burdens with it and some struggles and some late nights scratching my head thinking, how are we going to make ends meet, you know? But now that I look back now, it's probably one of my biggest accomplishments that I can tell you out of everything I've done was that my wife got to stay at home and raise all three of our children.
That's right. Amen. Lane, I've monopolized it. You had something.
No, I mean, you took it to a pretty somber level here. I didn't have anything that deep to say. I'm glad you went down that route, because it just, you know, Logan, when we first started talking on this podcast, you talked about your teenage years and a lot of these YouTube videos, you know, when you were just a teenager, and how your music, how it's matured, you know, not just based on your experiences, but based on what happens to us as we get older. I mean, we mature, and our theme, you know, our lives become more as we mature. And you've taken and this is a song that Steve's talking about. I mean, you know, you took this to a level that I listened to this song 2 days ago, and I was like, man, that's deep. And it touched me. So your goal of touching people with lyrics was accomplished with this song.
Oh man, I appreciate that so much. You know, that's like I said, I just always want to put music out that makes somebody feel something. And you know, whether it's happy or sad or any of the in-betweens, it's just been able to put real stuff out there. You know, I've never been a fan of bubblegum music where you chew it up and spit it out, you know, and it means a lot to me because like I said, most of my songs are lived in, you know, and they're real. And just presenting them in the best way, you know, to everyone else. And like I said, it's just so cool hearing stuff like y'all are saying about something that I wrote. It honestly does. It means the world. And it's great to hear that it does resonate with people, you know, cause it's such a vulnerable thing to do to sit and write this story and, you know, put some chords to it and hope somebody understands, you know.
You know, and the crazy thing, like I mentioned earlier, is the fact that we're late to this party. I mean, you know, and I'm glad we're here. It doesn't matter how late we are to it. We're here. But, you know, one of the things Steve and I pride ourselves on is typically being able to stay on top of, you know, what's new. And I guess there's so much out there, and that's probably why we were late to your party. But and you're in our backyard. I mean, you're just down the road, like you said, in Washington. I mean, we're an hour away, if that. I mean, we're 45 minutes away, you know. And you mentioned Libby's Cafe. I know their chicken fried steak is pretty dang good. I know Barry Switzer likes to go there some too.
Oh man, he's a regular, isn't he? Yeah, they got some good food. I, you know, working there, my wife worked there for I think 17 years.
Wow.
Might get somebody in trouble. She worked there real young, at a real young age. But and then I worked there for golly, part-time, you know, I worked there for 4 or 5 years. So it was, you know, that definitely it's cool, you know, with the music scene that was there. I mentioned the damn Quails and all that. It's just, it's a really cool story, honestly.
So they still do open mic and, is that right? They still do open mic there.
Yeah. They do open mic. I believe it's on Wednesday nights. I haven't been up there a lot lately. We go to church on Wednesday nights, so I'm typically tied up on Wednesdays, and we'll go Thursdays to Hollywood Corners with Rick, who I mentioned taught me guitar. He actually runs the open mic still there at Toby's Bar. But okay. Yeah, Libby's has they have an open mic on Wednesday nights, and then I want to say they're still having bands on Fridays and Saturday nights, and they got some pretty good artists that come through there. And it's, you know, it's we're spoiled in Oklahoma and Texas. We really are.
Oh, for sure.
To the music that we get to listen to, you know, for 3 hours on a Saturday night, you know, not a lot of people will do that anywhere else, you know, and it's definitely a cool thing and a cool scene. And I'm just grateful to, you know, sprout it up in the middle of it.
Well, you're doing it, man. And it looks like we lost Steve. I don't know what happened to him. He said he just texted me, said his internet went wacky, whatever that means. I don't know when, I don't know what else Steve told you about this podcast. When we put it together, our goal, his goal with it is to introduce people to, you know, artists that may not be household names. Mm-hmm. Randy Rogers Band, Cross Canadian Rag, you know, just the gamut. We run the gamut of those names. But the thing that's happened is we've run into a couple that, you know, we weren't very familiar with. And you're one of those. I can tell you this. You got two people up here in Piedmont America, for what it's worth. We don't have a large reach, but we're going to, you know, we can, the people we do reach, you know, they'll tell friends, and I know it's, you know, it's a small domino to push over, but I can promise you, you got two big fans up here in Piedmont, and we're just kind of irritated we weren't here earlier.
Well, I appreciate that, and you know, like I tell everybody, man, that the fans are honestly what drives this career, you know, for anyone, not just me, for anyone. And it doesn't matter that, you know, from the first to the last, I'm grateful for all of them just for their time, you know, to sit and listen to some stories I have to say. And
I'll tell you what, we got some of the most supportive fans that I've ever seen, you know, and it's been hard. I tell my wife gets so mad at me because, you know, we're playing, actually, we're going to announce it on your podcast. We are playing at the Blue Door on August 20. It's the third Friday of August. I think it's the 22nd of August. We're playing at the Blue Door, and that will be my first headlining show right here in Oklahoma City, which is so awesome.
I tell people the best listening room in this part of the country.
Yeah, man. And I'm so excited, but I joke to my wife all the time, you know, we got family and friends that are genuinely fans, you know, of my music, not just because they know me and have to be a fan, you know, and it's so funny to me. I'm like, why are they all wanting to come over on a Thursday night to listen to me play? It still just shocks me every day. And I really hope I never lose it. Because it keeps me, you know, there's a good anxious and excited too, you know, and it keeps me on edge enough to want to stay creative all the time, you know, and do all that. And it's just really cool to see all the fans here, you know, and how supportive Oklahoma is. It's just crazy to read those comments and see all these Oklahoman people, and they have so much pride in being from Oklahoma and finding an Oklahoma artist. And that makes me feel, you know, that makes a guy feel special, you know what I mean? When you see other people taking pride up in where you're from and what you're
for sure. Yeah. I mean you're one of ours. I mean that's the, you know, in Oklahoma yeah, it's always really, been like that.
It's really like that, you know, and I mean these people, you know, not that I'm not grateful for any fan, but like the people from Oklahoma, they care. You know what I mean? And they don't have a problem expressing that. And that's so cool to read those comments. And it's very encouraging because, man, I'm going to tell you what, there's some days in this business that I just get down on myself. And with social media, it's so easy to go look at another similar artist that was maybe breaking out when you were and looking at where they are now and, you know, going, man, why am I not there? Or why am, you know, but you know what? In the mornings when I wake up and I jump on the internet real quick before work and I look at all those comments, it just keeps me going every day, you know, seeing all those.
Steve, welcome back.
You what a damn. I don't know what happened.
But no, yes. It's really cool, man, to like I said, and just, you know, even y'all listening to hearing y'all talk about what I'm doing, it's I just want to let y'all know I appreciate it so much, and I feel very lucky to be on y'all's podcast, getting to talk about everything that I'm doing, you know, and that y'all would take your time to do that. So I just want to make sure.
You know, and the thing is, as you move through this, you're going to have opportunities to get into, you know, a much bigger stage than what we provide. You know, I feel like we're pretty genuine, and our motives aren't pushed by dollars. We're just, right. we just like talking to the artist and the source of the music and mm-hmm. and hearing the stories like you've told tonight. I mean, that's what it's all about. You know, and that's for us, that's the joy we get out of it, is to be able to hear this and just understand where it comes from. So, you know, we appreciate you giving us that opportunity. And Steve, you missed the announcement. I don't know if you heard it. Logan was kind enough to make the announcement on our podcast that he's going to be playing the Blue Door in August.
Come on.
Hey, and that's the best listening room in this part of the country.
Yeah.
Hands
first,
down.
First headlining show, Steve. Very first.
Oh, my gosh.
Right here in my backyard.
August what? I'm sorry that I missed it.
Boy, it's the third Friday in August. I think it's August 22nd.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That, you know, I've heard, I've been to the Blue Door many times. I've heard Chris Knight say this. Here's the thing, and I don't want to turn this into a political conversation. Chris Knight, I don't think will be going back there for a while. He's got some, I think, philosophical differences with Greg. Greg's yes. been an outstanding contributor to the music scene in the state. He's Hall of Famer for sure.
Oh yeah.
But I've heard Chris Knight, I've heard BJ Barham say this, I've heard Bruce Robinson say this, Mike McClure, I've heard Monty Montgomery say it. They all say it is the best place if you're a musician to play music in this part of the country. So
I believe it, man. That's John Moreland. I was listening to a podcast the other day. He played there not too long back, and he was talking about it, just raving about it. So I'm super excited. I've actually never even been to a show at the Blue Door. I've heard millions of stories, but I've never, man, I'm kind of a recluse, to be honest. I gotta let the cat out of the bag. I don't get out a whole lot. When I'm home and not working, I stay home and read a book most of the time or play with my kiddos. So, but yeah, no, I'm super excited. And it was honestly out of nowhere. I got notified last week and I was like, are you kidding me? So we're so excited, and it's going to be guitar, vocal, it's going to be acoustic, just me and a microphone and some stories, which is my favorite type of setting. So we're I'll tell you this, what, from top to bottom, we're going to play them all.
Look forward to it. Did y'all talk about the release of the album?
No, we haven't yet. We haven't yet. So EP. Yep. I'm going to release an EP. Right now it's got 6 tracks on it. I am working on, so there's 5 tracks that are with a band. And then we're going to put 2 acoustic, guitar vocals on it that I'm working on right now. We had it all set what we were going to do. And then last week I wrote 2 new songs and I just don't know if I can't not put them on. So I threw a loop to everybody and I'm like, hey, let's hold on for a second. I was actually in the studio Tuesday, recording both of them and working on them. But those 2 I'm really excited about. And so I think the first EP is going to have 7 tracks on it. I know for sure Steel Toe Boots is going to be on it. Redbird is going to be on it. West Virginia, You and Me. Turquoise Angel, which is the title of the EP. And then I believe there's 3 more. We thought about sticking another version of Stay at Home Mom on there and then kind of felt like maybe that was too soon, you know, rushed wise to get it produced. But yeah, it's going to have 6 to 7 tracks on it. And I'm excited. Hey There Jesus is on there as well. But yeah, I'm really excited with what we've recorded. You know, Sean Sullivan is who produced the majority of the EP. Trevor Thornton, he's producing the 2 acoustic versions. But Sean, he's a good dude, and he gets it, and he's got a good sound. And he did a lot of work on Tyler Childers' records, the Purgatory, one of his bigger records. He produced all that with Dave Ferguson. So we hit it off, and man, I'm really excited. I think that, you know, it's still weird to me. I'm that guy that like kind of cringes at hearing my own voice for some reason. So it's still weird to me to hear a full band with me. I'm still getting used to that as far as on the production side. I'm so used to just playing stuff, you know, guitar, vocal. But one thing I do want to tell everybody is all of these songs are coming out acoustic too. And we'll make another announcement on your podcast. I'm going to randomly drop them. They're not going to be on an EP or anything like that. We're just going to throw them out there 2 at a time after the EP's out. So I'm really excited about that too.
Where will you put them out? Where will you drop them?
They will be everywhere. iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, Pandora. I mean, everywhere you can get music.
Okay.
So you just so you know, and that this isn't a plug for what I do by any means, but I have a retail tea store that we run several of these. We own and manage those. And one of the big things is music on our playlist. And I personally curated our 850 song playlist, which has a lot of this kind of music. And awesome. You've got 2 of your songs already added to the playlist. So they're spinning in an HTO. So
I love it. I love it. I'm going to, when we get off here, I'm going to get your cell phone number and I'm going to give you all a sneak peek of a couple of them on the EP. So y'all share them on your phone and let people listen to them and see what they think.
We're all over it. Yeah. Got plenty of people to share it with. The 22nd lane, this is important, of August is a Friday. So that may need to be a field trip. I'll be there. It's done.
Awesome. Logan, awesome. I can't wait to see y'all and shake your hand. You'll have to come early and come hang out. Maybe we can do another podcast in the green room.
Let's do it. And when we go off camera here and off recording, we'll talk about a whole nother thing for that day as well. And maybe another day too. Awesome. Yeah. Oh, that's great. We'll be there, but maybe that's a field trip day, Lane, for the Friday group.
Yep.
We'd love to have y'all there.
Well, we'll be there.
Man,
Logan, this has been great. We're an hour and 20 into this.
Are we really? And, don't even feel like that.
Yeah, hour and 20. So, well, Steve, unless there's anything you want to add to it, we'll wrap up.
I could easily spend another hour and 20 minutes with everything I want to talk to Logan about. But
it would start another rabbit hole.
I'm being serious. August 22nd. Let's just do it in the green room.
Plan that. Yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's That'd do.
Cool. Let's just yeah. plan it.
As y'all can tell, I love talking. I warned you before we started this. I'm a talker, so I get on standard. Just keep going.
That's what makes these great. The people that listen, when I get, comments back from the people that listen, they love to hear the stories, the backstories, the everything behind the songs. And believe it or not, yes, we're poorly produced. We're poorly funded. We're not Joe Rogan. We're not. But I had a text from a guy I know down in Dallas a couple weeks ago, that said, hey, I re-listened to one of your podcasts. It was when we had Jared Sterrett. I don't know if you know Jared Sterrett or not.
Yes. Logan.
Yeah. We had him on here and he said, man, I re-listened to your podcast. And man, I just, every time I listen to him, I'm a bigger fan. And I told my wife, we're buying tickets he had a show in Dallas sometime, And so we're not going to turn you into the greatest, red dirt star that ever lived, but there are people who care about this. There are people who listen to hear what you have to say, and you're going to get more fans when they hear.
Well, I appreciate that, guys. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. Honestly, like I said, it's just the fans are in the forefront of my mind, and getting them music and I like to think some of my music heals, and so I mean just that's what music's all about to me, is people sharing it around and listening to it and finding common ground in it, and the best way to do that is stuff like this, and people stumble. I love it. My favorite thing ever is actually not writing songs or any of that. It's stumbling upon new artists that make me go, damn, like I wish I wrote that, and it's just so cool. And I'm a nerd, so a lot of mine come from either podcasts or I'll listen to books and, someone mentions someone's name and I go look them up and fall down that rabbit hole. But it's cool, and it's cool that people are always out there looking for new music and new people to listen to. It sure helps guys like me out.
They certainly are. And before we close officially, Logan, can you tell us where to find merchandise and those other things that people can spend money on?
LoganMacMusic.com. We have all of our merch on there. And my lovely wife is our merch girl currently. And she loves going to the barn and picking up orders. And she might just meet y'all if you're from Oklahoma. We're not big enough yet. We like to go shake people's hand and give them some merch and tell them thank you. So, LoganMacMusic.com. Is all of my merch. I will tell you, we got, if you're thinking about buying a t-shirt, just hold on, because we got a super talented girl from Stillwater who's done a lot of work with Turnpike Troubadours and Wyatt Flores that just designed our Redbird t-shirt that we're putting out, and it is so cool. So probably another month we'll have it out. But yeah, we got some merch, and something it's important to me that I like to say is all our merch is local. My t-shirts are made in Purcell, Oklahoma, and my hats are made in Oklahoma City by Retro Hat Company. So it's all your money's, spent and paid through Oklahoma, which I have a lot of pride in telling people.
I appreciate you saying hold off, but I've looked at your merch and you got some cool stuff on there already. So people listening, don't necessarily hold off. Buy what you like on his merch site right now and then buy the red bird shirt later on, because I want a couple of those shirts, and I definitely want some stickers, Logan.
Well, my wife's pretty creative, so she handles all that and designs it all and puts a lot into it, so she'll appreciate you saying that.
And what's the title of the EP again?
Turquoise Angel.
Turquoise Angels. Okay, so the EP's Turquoise Angels.
Yes, sir.
May 30th, opening for Radney Foster at the Kessler in Dallas. Yep. August 22nd, the Blue Door, headlining the Blue Door on a Friday night. This is awesome. LoganMacMusic.com. Logan, we can't thank you enough for coming on with us, man. It's been enjoyable.
I appreciate it. I look forward to doing it again many times.
Well, we're going to wrap it up.
Let's do it in the green room. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Episode 2 of Logan Mack in the green room at the Blue Door.
I love it. Let's do it.
So, Logan, hang tight. We close this out. We want to thank you listeners out there for tuning in. For Steve McCormick, Lane Jones, thanks to our guest, Logan Mack, and this episode of Red Dirt and Hill Country Podcast. We are out of here, and we will catch you on the next one. We'll catch Logan Mack in August for his second appearance on this podcast. See ya.